The fight for gay, lesbian, and trans civil rights, the years of outrageous injustice, the early battles, the defeats, and the victories beyond the dreams of the gay rights pioneers is a powerful civil rights issue of the present day. In her new book, The Gay Revolution, The Story of the Struggle, scholar Lillian Faderman provides an account of the fight for LGBTQ rights. Lillian Faderman is an internationally respected scholar of lesbian history and literature. She is the author of several award-winning books on LGBT history, including Surpassing the Love of Men and Odd Girls. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Lillian Faderman to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Wonderful to have you here. This book is, I will tell you right up front, it is a very big book, and it tells a very complex and complete history. What led you to want to look at the revolution?
Well, I think that so many people look at the progress that LGBT people have made over the last years and think it was so quick. It happened overnight, but it was really a 70-year struggle beginning in 1950 when the first homophile organization, as these so-called homosexual organizations had been named, to avoid the word sexual. So that was the beginning, with organizations such as Mattachine and Daughters of Bilitis that first conceived of fighting for our civil rights. And it was a very long struggle with many tragedies in the way and many wonderful victories. And I wanted to depict that struggle. I wanted to depict how we got from the 1950s, when things were so bad for gays and lesbians and bisexual people and transgender people, to today, when we're almost, not quite, but almost first-class American citizens.
Mm. With that said, and I ask this question only to gauge your thoughts on the matter, which is, 8 years ago, could you have imagined that we are where we are with the Supreme Court decision on gay marriage?
Well, I certainly had that hope 8 years ago. There were numerous setbacks in California. For instance, there was Proposition 8 that repealed the right of same-sex couples to marry, a right that they had for only 6 months. There continued to be setbacks, as we see in the news. The dust-up in Kentucky, for instance, with a clerk deciding that she's not going to do the duty that she's sworn to do because of her religious principles. But the progress over the last 8 years has certainly been phenomenal, not only with same-sex marriage, but the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I think the change in public opinion has been phenomenal. But the point that I wanted to make in the book is that the last 8 years isn't the entire story of what happened. It took a long time to work up to the progress that we've made over the last 8 years.
And I want to get into that backstory in just a moment. But I specifically asked about 8 years because you think of President Obama's administration and at the beginning of his term being non-committal when it comes to certainly gay marriage and even gay rights, and then becomes very pointed in his support to the point where we have rainbow colors being shown on the White House the night of the decision by the Supreme Court. That, going back to your earlier point, that seems to be a lot of change in a very swift period of time.
Yes, I think that President Obama's heart was always in the right place when it came to gay rights. One of the first things that he tried to do when he took office was to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and he immediately got some blowback. He was told by military people that he was going too quickly. But there was a huge survey that the military did of enlisted personnel and found that enlisted personnel had no significant objections to lesbians and gays serving alongside them in the military. And I think that as a result of all of the work that has been done for so many years, public opinion was beginning to change. I think we saw it in the media with series like Modern Family, for instance, that was the favorite TV sitcom of Mrs. Romney as well as Mrs. Obama, according to a survey in the or interviews in the Hollywood Reporter. Public opinion was beginning to change, and I think the president understood that it was becoming safer in his position to come out with his support for issues such as same-sex marriage. I actually had the opportunity to ask President Obama a question long before he was president. This was in 2006, and this was at the Miami International Book Fair, where he was talking about his book, The Audacity of Hope. And my question is that he had spoken so eloquently about the struggle for black civil rights and what did he think about gay civil rights and same-sex marriage. And his response was very telling. He said that if he were running the campaign for same-sex marriage and gay civil rights, he would never have started with the topic of gay marriage. But then he said, but when my parents married in 1961, there were 18 states in the Union where they could not have married because, of course, they were an interracial couple.
Right.
And then he said, so how could I be against same-sex marriage? So I think that's where his heart was, even in 2006 when he was still a senator. And I think he understood that public opinion was making it permissible to come out, that television program with Robin Roberts, where he announced that he had evolved to the position where he supported same-sex marriage.
You begin the book primarily in the 1950s, and of course this is a time, as you describe, where law classified gays, lesbians, and trans people as criminals. Psychiatrists saw them as mentally ill. Churches believed them to be sinners, and they were victimized by society. You focus on the people who ultimately fought against that, who began to fight back. Tell me a little bit about that group and how it came together of sort of these strands that are on their own and then start to form into a movement.
I think that the early groups couldn't have conceived of asking for much more than getting the police to stop entrapping gay men in bars, getting the sodomy laws repealed, simply being let alone to live their lives. But I think that as those groups formed, the first group, Mattachine Society, was the first to define homosexuals as an oppressed cultural minority, much as African Americans had been oppressed. And I think as those groups grew and developed, they understood that as an oppressed cultural minority, much more was needed than simply to be able to live your life without worrying about police entrapping you or bursting into your bedroom. One of the first wonderful activists who understood that was Frank Kameny, who was a Harvard PhD in astronomy, and he had been hired by the government for the Army Map Service, not a military job, but a government job as a PhD in astronomy. He was doing very well in his job, but this was in 1957, and there were background checks to see if employees were dissolute in any way, and particularly to see if they were homosexuals. And Kameny had had an arrest in a sting for homosexuality. He was fired from his job. He tried to get the Department of Defense, the State Department, and the Civil Service Commission, and the President and the Supreme Court to help him. He tried absolutely everything, didn't succeed. In 1961, he formed Mattachine Society, Washington, D.C., and he was the first to really militantly express his activism. He formed a group that would picket with him in 1965. They picketed the White House. They picketed the Pentagon. They picketed the State Department. They picketed Independence Hall. And the message that the picketers carried in their signs was always, homosexuals deserve equal rights. Homosexuals must be considered first-class American citizens. And I think that was really the beginning of significant demands for rights for LGBT people. Stonewall riots, which happened in 1969, put gay on the map. But even in that case, there was a long backstory of these organizations forming and trying to agitate, trying to organize, to get LGBT civil rights recognized by our government.
When you think of these movements and as they start to come together, and you mentioned Stonewall and into the 70s, as things started to grow, I'm curious as to what did the AIDS crisis do to the movement?
The AIDS crisis was certainly the worst tragedy that the LGBT movement ever suffered through. And yet, it's almost ironic that it was the AIDS crisis that really brought people in the movement together, united them as they hadn't been before. Mm. One thing that happened as a result of the AIDS crisis is that many more people were outed involuntarily, of course, through the disease. But many other people realized that this was no time to stay in the closet when people were dying, when they needed help. They needed their brothers and sisters to come out and say, we have to have more government funding to find a cure. They needed their brothers and sisters to come out to friends and say, I'm gay too, and please support us. And I think the AIDS crisis also united diverse parts of the LGBT community. In the 1970s, lesbians and lesbian feminists had been very angry with gay men because they saw them as being as much male chauvinists as straight men were. Because of the AIDS crisis, lesbians realized that this was no time for personal anger. Gay men really needed their help, not only help in starting things like food banks, which lesbians started all over the country, but also their help in agitating for government funding to finally find a cure for AIDS. And that's exactly what happened. Because of that agitation by the LGBT community, AIDS is so much less a problem than it was in the 1980s and 1990s. So it's ironic that it was that terrible AIDS crisis that really brought the community together to fight as it never had before, and to understand, too, that united we can fight for civil rights as well as for a cure for AIDS. And I think that's when the LGBT movement became very strong.
Lillian Federman is our guest. The name of the new book is The Gay Revolution, The Story of the Struggle. I'm curious, and perhaps this is an overly idealistic question, but I thought of it several times as I was reading the book, and that is, the fight for gay rights, the fight for civil rights, the fight for women's rights, and many strands of those fights still remain, of course. But when it comes to just how we treat other human beings who perhaps are different or have different beliefs than we do, why does one fight not help the other?
I think one fight does help the other, in fact. I think that LGBT people looked at the African-American struggle for equal rights and realized that had to be the model for the struggle for LGBT equal rights. We've had in the LGBT movement no equivalent of Martin Luther King, but we have had equivalents of Bayard Rustin, who incidentally was himself a gay man, but very closeted, but he was Martin Luther King's primary strategist. And I think many of the gay leaders modeled themselves and their ideas after Bayard Rustin, just as in 1963 there was a march on Washington for African American jobs and freedom. So in 1979 there was a march on Washington for gay and lesbian civil rights, not for jobs particularly, but certainly for civil rights in all ways.
But one comes.
And I think that also, just as African Americans realized that they had to make dramatic statements to get more people to listen, I think the Stonewall riots, for instance, was one of our dramatic statements. And significantly, it came just at the end of the decades of the 60s, after a very dramatic decade for African-American civil rights and feminist rights and anti-war protests. Finally, 6 months before the end of the decade, gay people realized that it was crucial to get public attention by saying, we're hurting. We need to be considered first-class American citizens and not outlaws and subversives as we've been considered. And I think that was, at least in good part, what was behind the Stonewall riots in June of 1969.
But one comes after the other, and I guess what I'm curious to explore just a little bit is why we can't say at one time, okay, these are the people who are being oppressed in some way, and look at it overall as a human rights issue.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Yes. Yes. What we need to say is that all Americans should be considered first-class American citizens. But that doesn't happen on its own, apparently. It takes a struggle from various oppressed cultural minorities, as
right.
Mattachine Society formed that phrase in 1950. It takes a struggle for each minority to achieve the rights for that group, as we've seen historically.
The subtitle of your book is The Story of the Struggle, which I guess my follow-up question would be, is that struggle important to make the cause even stronger, meaning that you have to have that struggle to get where you are and to be in that first-class citizen position?
I think so. And I think it was realizing that we had to struggle together that united a very diverse community, gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgender and queer people are really as diverse as any community in America. Some of us are poor, some of us are middle class, some of us are rich. Some of us are from the South and have Southern values. Some of us are from the coast and have coastal values. What united us was realizing that we had these common enemies that were opposed to all of us, regardless of who we were outside of our sexuality or gender identification. And we had to unite together and struggle together. And I think that that's what finally put us in the relatively good position that we're in today.
So let us talk about that relatively good position. The book is beautiful in telling this history and this story of the struggle, as I mentioned. Where do we go from here, and where do you feel that all of what we have, what has been done, and all of the groundwork that has been laid, of where we go from here?
There are still things that absolutely must be done. In 1974 and 1975, U.S. Congresswoman Bella Abzug proposed something that was called the Equality Act that would give gay and lesbian people the same sorts of federal protections that other minorities have in employment discrimination and housing discrimination and public accommodations. It also included protections against hate crimes. That was in 1974. She could get no traction then. Again, in 1975, she got a little more interest, but it never even got on the floor of the House. We still don't have something like the Equality Act. We still don't have sweeping federal protections, just as other minorities and women and the disabled have. So I think that needs to be done. We need a sweeping federal act that protects us as African Americans and religious minorities and women are protected. I think also we see from what's happened in Kentucky very recently that the religious right will continue to try to find ways to somehow undermine the advances that the LGBT movement has achieved. And I think it needs to be made very clear in response to those attempts that the public won't stand for it. The public won't stand for discrimination, and the law doesn't stand for it. You can't take a job that asks you to serve all of the people in your community and say, I'll serve everyone except those that my religion permits me to discriminate against. So I think we need to work on making that clearer to all public officials. And I'm hopeful that that's going to happen. In Indiana and Arkansas a few months ago, both governors were about to sign into law something called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which would have permitted businesses that serve the public, such as wedding cake bakers or tuxedo and gown makers, to discriminate on the basis of their religion against same-sex couples. And what happened was quite wonderful. In Indiana, for instance, the head of Salesforce.com, who had just invested billions of dollars into a business in Indianapolis, said that he would withdraw much of his business if the governor signed that so-called Religious Freedom Act into law. Celebrities such as Audra McDonald said that she wouldn't appear in Indiana if the Religious Freedom Act were signed into law. There was so much public protest that finally the Indianapolis Star had a huge banner headline telling the governor, fix this now. And indeed, Governor Mike Pence did fix it. He signed a law that gave people religious freedom, but not freedom to discriminate against gays and lesbians.
Well, the book is so important and so powerful. It is The Gay Revolution, The Story of the Struggle. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Lillian Federman, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for...
Thank you so much for inviting
sharing your
me.
Knowledge. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is The Gay Revolution, The Story of the Struggle, published by Simon & Schuster, by Lillian Federman. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.